Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, this is the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotion with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and followers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lives online. Listen to your favorite spiritual and master teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. My name is Luciana Stiglitz. I'm the founder of Inner Healers, and I will be your host in this adventure. May you allow yourself to enjoy it.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglitz and I will be your host today. This very, very special interview is with our dear friend Lynn Forrest, and the topic is victim consciousness. You can live outside the triangle. Lynn is a reality guide and personal growth mentor. She's the author of Guiding Principles for Life Beyond Victim Consciousness. She was educated through a lifetime of studying and observing metaphysical life principles, which taught her early in life how to learn and apply those principles to her own life in very positive ways. As a perpetual student of life and consciousness, Lynn has devoted her career to studying with masters of various disciplines: family dynamics, Jungian principles, dreams and shadow work, psychodrama and energy, as well as the laws of manifestation, body-oriented practices such as yoga, physical, and Wing Chun and Qigong are just some of the approaches Lynn applies in her work with others. Through her work with clients, Lynn has developed a unique understanding of how the mind works and ways to liberate it from the throes of what she calls the victim mind. I'm very happy to introduce her to you. Hello, Lynn. How are you doing today?
Hello, Luciana. It's nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you. It's very nice to hear your voice again, to have you here with us at Inner Healers Radio. So for those people who might be our first-time listeners, can you please shortly describe what is victim consciousness for you?
Victim consciousness is the all-pervasive epidemic of looking at the world from the standpoint that says that I'm suffering and it's because of something outside of me, that it's because you didn't speak right, you didn't do this, they didn't let me have it, they're getting in my way, I can't, because anytime we look out at the world and see it as the cause of our unhappiness, we're in what I call victim consciousness. And it's victim consciousness simply because we're seeing ourselves at the mercy of something outside of us, which means that my okayness and my well-being is dependent on the way the world treats me rather than the reality, which is that the way I see the world determines how I feel about it, what my thoughts about the world, not what the world's doing, but what I'm telling myself about that is what creates or gets in the way of my inner happiness.
So according to the concept of victim consciousness, when we feel unhappy and we believe that this unhappiness is caused by external situations, people, anything rather than us or ourselves, then we might be experiencing victim consciousness, right?
Right. And that does not mean that we do not victimize one another. It doesn't mean that painful things don't happen to us. It doesn't mean that I'm not the victim of a disease or of a rape or of some external outside happening. I can be a victim, however, of circumstances and never go into victim consciousness. In other words, it's not what happens to us, but what we do with what happens to us in our own mind that determines whether or not we're living in a state of victim consciousness. So I want to be sure to differentiate between those two things. I'm not saying there's not victims in the world.
Right. So in a sense, maybe a person can be imprisoned unjustifiably and still choose not to feel a victim. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And the way to do that, and really, frankly, I think Jesus Christ was probably the premium example of someone who went through ultimate victimization. He was victimized by the Pharisees and the teachers of the Jewish tradition and all of that. But he never went into victim. He never said, well, it's their fault, or they won't let me, or I'm going to have to take vengeance, or I'm going to tell, or why me, or they shouldn't have, this shouldn't be happening to me, or they're hurting me, or they're keeping me from. Matter of fact, he saw it all as part of a plan that he came to live out, a story he came to play out, and all he would say is, I am just simply here doing the will of the Father. And that is what it's like not to be in victim consciousness, even in the midst of being victimized.
Mm-hmm, right. So do you think this is for all of us, regular people, do you think this is like a little bit difficult sometimes, you know? Somebody does something and we may relate it to situations that happened before us, that maybe we didn't forgive, or maybe something that we lived with our parents, and we somehow relate these past situations with what is happening right now, and maybe we just feel that it is happening all over again for us. So how... for our listeners, would you explain the possibility of being able to choose to react in a different manner, to see things differently to start with?
Well, the first thing I would say is that this process is a very simple one, meaning anyone can do it. That does not make it easy to do. So it is both simple and difficult. It's difficult simply because we are addicted to seeing the world in particularly painful ways. It's like I believe that the true addiction of all addictions is to our own belief systems. When I believe, for instance, that I'm an unlovable person, or when I believe, for instance, that the world is a dangerous place, then that belief is going to affect the way I feel about myself, about the world. Those beliefs are going to affect, therefore, the choices I make and the way I react to life. And the way I feel and react to life, feel about life and react to it, will determine how others respond to me, how the world, what the world gives me back. And that is how I end up, and we each end up proving to ourselves our own unhappy story about the world. So we're all engaged in this. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's a problem. I think it's what we come to do. I think of Earth as being a boot camp for souls. It's like kindergarten boot camp, meaning that I look around at the world, I don't see grown-ups here. I see even our highest officials acting like children, blaming one another, finger-pointing, passing the buck, proclaiming and railing against life as the victims of it. These are all degrees of maturity or lack of maturity. And so we're here to sort of grow up as souls and to begin to understand that it's what we believe that we will prove, whatever that is. So we get to just see in life here on planet Earth what it is we're believing. And that gives us, and once we are aware of that, then we have the choice about whether or not I want to go on believing that thing that is bringing me so much pain, because in truth, it's not a very kind thing to do to ourselves, to believe, for instance, that I'm unlovable, or to believe, for instance, that I can't trust anyone. These are beliefs that hurt us, hurt me when I believe them. And so what motivates us to begin to choose to examine what we're believing and to step back, and rather than blindly believing, step back from that belief and question it, is the motivation that says, do I want to go on being so merciless and unkind to myself?
Regarding these beliefs that you mentioned, in your book, Guiding Principles for Life Beyond Victim Consciousness, in Chapter 5, you mentioned the belief clearing process, and you somehow explain how can we dismantle our core beliefs. Can you briefly explain this for our listeners?
The core belief, yes. The core beliefs, we all have them. And when we use the word core, that's because they are core to the definition of who we believe ourselves to be. So we have this constellation of beliefs that we've taken on. And frankly, Luciana, we know that some of these beliefs come down to us through the very DNA that we inherit from our parents. In other words, we now know that the neuroscience and quantum physics has shown that the way what we believe changes our gene material. It actually changes our genes. It changes our DNA. And so as we begin to change the way we believe, we change our DNA. But it also means that whatever belief systems that we are born into through the family and the parents that we are born to will be passed on to us. So we'll actually inherit a sort of a setup that we're here to explore. This is not by coincidence. This is not a mistake. This is not a problem. It's what we're here to do. We're not here to have this utopian life that we think we should have. And that, as a matter of fact, most of us tell ourselves we've done something wrong if we don't have it. We're being punished, or we're not doing it right, or because life is not giving me what it seems to give others. No, the only thing that keeps me from having the abundance that life offers of health, of whatever it is we want, is the belief systems that we hold. And we come here to play out those belief systems so that we can make them visible, so that we can experiment with them, so that we can exchange with these beliefs in the form of the experiences we attract magnetically. We are magnetic energetic thoughts are magnetic, electromagnetic. That means they have a charge. So when I think a thought, it transmits a charge that will attract to it the equal reflection of it. So I will get to see and meet in the flesh, I like to say, meet in the flesh that which we believe. And that is for our growing consciousness. It's for the purpose of maturing and expanding our consciousness to evolve us as spiritual souls, as spiritual beings, which is what we are. We are spiritual beings in a vessel called a body, a material form that we've taken on in order to have this very concrete experience of what it is we believe, so that we can step back from it and decide what is the fruit of this belief in my life? What is the harvest? What does it bring me? Is that what I want? Do I want to see more of that? What in my belief system can I question that will allow me to experience something different? And that's
so
the
would
grand
you say
experiment
then
we're all
this,
here.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that these beliefs that we have in some way affect our vessel, our body, becoming sickness?
Absolutely. Yes. Because the body is the first reflection of the mind. So whatever, and I think Dr. Bruce Lipton was the first to actually write, that I read, a book about the biology of belief. That's the name of his book. And it's about that discovery he made in the Petri dish of how it is that our beliefs affect the body's response. That the body literally will give us whatever the mind tells it. So if the mind tells us that we're sick, it tells us that we're fragile, tells us that we can't handle life, the body will show us how that's true. It will prove that to us. It will be the first reflection of that belief system.
Mm-hmm. So also in your book, you tell us about how important it is to develop healthy boundaries. Can you please tell our listeners a little bit about this? How does this help us to not keep ourselves within the victim triangle?
Well, boundaries are, I like to say boundaries are a built-in, they're an inside job. In other words, it's not so much the external line in the sand that we like to draw and say, if you cross that line, especially when we don't really feel able or willing to reinforce it, that doesn't necessarily work. We end up feeling boundaryless, or like our boundaries are violated, or we put walls in place of boundaries. But real boundaries come from our belief system. Again, if I believe that I'm safe, then that is the very best boundary I can have, because what that creates around me is an energetic bubble of protection. Just the belief that I am safe puts me in a bubble, a boundary, so to speak, so that I naturally will send out a message. It will send out an electromagnetic charge that puts people around me on notice that I am protected, and it either won't attract those who might violate, or if someone comes into my space who is a violator of space, they will automatically know. They will sense the line, the boundary, the bubble of protection, and they won't try to push past it. It's a very interesting phenomenon that I have experienced directly on the ground. I'm sitting here thinking of several examples from my own life that of how that's true. But I'll tell you a story. I think about when I was a young woman and I was was a member of a dance team, and we were practicing, rehearsing on this in a small neighborhood of low income neighborhood, and there was a lot of gang members and that sort of thing, and we were practicing in the school there on the stage, and I put my bag, my purse with all my money, I just got my paycheck, blah blah blah, and I had it in my purse, I just cashed it, and I set it right behind the stage curtain, and I remember thinking at the time that I wanted it to be safe, and I envisioned it in a bubble of protection, that I put it in a bubble, a boundary, and I went back out on stage and was doing my dance, and in the middle of the dance, here I am totally caught up, not even thinking about anything else, I find that all of a sudden my body has moved me across the stage and jerked back the curtain where my bag, I'd left my purse, and there was a young man who was reaching for my bag at that very moment. It was as if energetically the boundary had been put in place, the bubble had been put in place, and energetically I was informed when it was being violated in time to actually catch him in the act. And what all I did was yank back the curtain, saw his hand reaching for my bag, looked up at him, made eye contact with him. he immediately pulled his hand away like he had been burned and turned and ran. And that was it. That was all the that was all there was to the encounter. But it brought home to me the power of that internal boundary setting, that what the best protection in the world is done right here within our own minds and how we see ourselves. That is how we protect ourselves and the world.
This is an amazing experience, as you say, of our enormous inner power and what we can do with it if we choose. Mm-hmm. So, reading your book, you have this chart, which I like very much, and you make differences between when I feel, when I want, when I am, between how things work if I feel that I am responsible for others versus how do I feel, how do I act if I feel that I am responsible to others. Would you please elaborate a little bit this about this for our listeners?
Yeah, if you remember, Luciana, I talk about the victim triangle there, and those are the three roles of victim consciousness. There are three defense strategies which are depicted as roles on the victim triangle, and that is the victim. So the victim triangle is an upside-down triangle, and the victim's at the bottom. And then if you're moving around the triangle from clockwise, actually, you move up to the next, to the left-hand corner there, and that's the persecutor, and which is the defense strategy of attack. So the victim actually is a defense strategy. That's a defense. The defense strategy for the victim is collapse. Like, I just collapse. And with the idea that if I'm little enough, defenseless enough, helpless enough, somebody else will protect me, take care of me. And then the second is the persecutor, and the defense strategy of the persecutor is to attack. If something's going to come at me, then what I'm going to do is strike first before I get struck kind of mentality. And that's a defense strategy. And then the third one, which is the one relevant to the chart that you just described, is called the rescuer. And the rescuer, the defense strategy of the rescuer is to fix it. So what I will do in order to be safe is I'll fix whatever I see as a problem. I will control it. I'll make it go away. I will take control of it and fix it, and that will. And so we call that taking responsibility for others. It's like when we control, it's always from a place of protection, self-protection. We control others because we believe they're the reason we hurt. And so in order to keep us from ourselves from hurting, we try to control that which we see is potentially hurtful, if that makes sense. And so that chart is when I take responsibility for people, here's what I do. I try to control them. I try to manipulate. I give them advice. I tell them what to do. I boss them around. I look for the answers. And what I am then is I'm nosy. I'm in their business. I'm overbearing. I'm judgmental. I'm those kinds of things. And the way I feel when I'm all of that is justified, maybe, but I'm also resentful. I feel unappreciated. I feel because it never works. You know, people don't like it when you try to run their lives. They just have a natural aversion to that. So even though I'm thinking I'm fixing their problem for them, they see me as in their business very often. And even though it may be that they believe they need me to fix it because they don't feel capable of fixing it themselves, they still resent me for it. So that's how we sort of move, we dance around the triangle. So that chart mm-hmm. then says, okay, so if I'm not taking responsibility for you, then, and I move off the triangle instead, I would move to a place of being responsible to you. I'm responsible for keeping the contract that we have together. like you and I today, we had a contract. The contract was that I would be available to talk with you and do this radio interview with you at this particular time. That's me, and so I'm responsible to you. I show up when I say I'm going to, and I answer the questions that I say I'm going to. But if I take responsibility for you, then I might be like, oh, well, Luciano may be late, so I better start calling her about 9 this morning, and I better make sure she's got her material all ready, and I better be sure that she's, you know, got everything fixed so that I can do this so that I can feel better. So that's me being responsible, too. And so taking responsibility for you rather than being responsible to do my part of the contract and trust that you will do your part. And that is what makes for harmony in relationships, is when I'm responsible to others, not taking responsibility for them. That's a very fine distinction, and it's one that for some of us can take a lifetime if we happen to be starting gate rescuers, that being our sort of our go-to place on the triangle.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then that to break the core belief cycle, you know, when we have painful feelings, we raise our defenses and this brings consequences, and, you know, everything you talk about in your book, would you say that the way to change this might start with changing the way we think?
Yes. It would be, although, see, I don't know that it's possible to decide that I'm not going to think like that anymore. It's like, okay, I'm going to change the way I think. I'm not going to think that thought anymore. Well, good luck with that, because I haven't seen that works. But I think it's more like I'm going to intervene on between me and my thinking. I'm going to step back from what I'm thinking and believing, because a belief is simply a thought that we've married. So, and when we marry what we think, it becomes a belief. And the way we know it's a belief is because when we believe something, we automatically feel and act as if it's true. And when we feel and act as if what we believe is true, then we will act in ways that invite others and the world to prove it to us. So we're all busy proving our own unhappy story. If I believe, again, that I'm unlovable, then I'm going to feel unlovable, and I'm going to act unlovably. I'm going to act in ways, because I don't really trust that you're going to love me anyway, so I'm going to be all about protecting myself from being abandoned, from being rejected, which I believe, because I think I'm unlovable, is inevitable, that inevitably you will reject me at some point. So I'm going to be trying to protect myself from feeling hurt when you reject me. So I might do that by not getting close to you, by striking out at you first to sort of drive you away so that I can at least then say I ran you off rather than you rejected me, which is still painful, but it's not as painful as believing I'm the reason you left. These are the kinds of things that we do. So essentially I reject you first. And then, of course, you, feeling rejected, react to me in all the ways you do, which might be to pull away, to be offended, to be hurt, to walk away from me. Now, you've just given me the evidence that proves, see, I knew they would reject me in the end. And I never have to look at what I did to set that up. That's me playing out my core belief on the core belief cycle.
So, Lynn, when we start chatting with ourselves, you know, this inner conversation, inner negative conversation, and we start saying to ourselves, oh, I will never be safe, I'm at the mercy of those stronger, more powerful people, I am bad and I deserve to be punished, or I must be perfect to be accepted by others, or the unhappiness that they're experiencing is my fault. You know, when we start with these negative conversations, how can we stop doing this? You know, first realize that we're doing this, then stop doing this, and then invite our objective mind to take control and start shifting it to a different frequency, start shifting it to positive comments towards ourselves. How can we do this for our listeners?
So, yeah, the first thing that we do in order to intervene on these core beliefs, these negative, and by the way, there are positive core beliefs too. We just don't really talk too much about those because those are working and we don't really need to intervene on those. So when I use the word core beliefs, I'm talking about the limited, painful ones that sort of play out in our lives in destructive, painful ways. But the very first thing to notice is that when that whole core belief cycle starts within my own mind. In other words, as soon as I decide, make a decision, or begin to think and believe a particular thought, like that I'm unlovable or any of the things that you just mentioned, those are a great litany of core beliefs that you just went through. As soon as I start believing any one of those things, that's me on the triangle persecuting myself. So I'm persecuting me by just simply reciting all of that to me. Oh, you're a failure, Lynn, because you didn't do it right, and now no one's ever going to appreciate you, and you are so this or that, no wonder people don't care about you. This is me persecuting me with what I believe about me. And then what I do, and then I feel bad. I feel all the feelings that go with beating myself up that way. I feel bad about myself. I feel inadequate. I feel worthless. I feel unlovable. And then the way I rescue myself on the triangle when I'm doing that to myself is I then blame something outside of me. Because it's sort of like, then it must, it's either my fault because I'm believing there's something wrong with me, and as soon as I believe there's something wrong with me, I'm going to decide one or two things. It's either because there's something wrong with me or because there's something wrong with the world, and it's their fault. And the way I rescue myself from making it all about me is to turn and say, no, it's because she didn't show up on time. It's because he said that nasty thing to me. It's because they won't let me have whatever it is I think I should have. I begin to blame, and then I begin to do the outside. And so the way we begin to move off of that victim triangle is, first of all, to recognize we're on it and to recognize where we're on it. And the second thing is to recognize that as soon as I judge me for being on the victim triangle, guess where I am on the triangle? I'm back in persecutor. Now I'm judging me for being, what is wrong with you, Liv? Why do you keep treating yourself that way? Why don't you stop doing that? See, you're a loser. You'll never get it right. You'll never change. You're hopeless. Now I'm feeling all the hopelessness, I'm back on that triangle again. And then I'm going to need to blame something out there. No, it's because I don't have time. It's because my job is too hard. It's because I have this or that wrong with my body. I stay problem fixated. The way off the triangle is through reality. And reality has, what I've done is I've put together a set of guiding principles, 10 to be exact. There's 14 in the book. I've brought them down even further, refined them to 10. 10 guiding principles that are the constructs of reality. When I'm aligned with reality, I see the world through these 10 guiding principles. And so what I want to do is, first of all, I want to make conscious of in my mind what my core belief cycle is, where it plays out on the triangle, so that I can recognize myself when I'm there. And then the second thing I want to do is not judge me for it, but to step back from it and bring in the guiding principles. What if I were to see the situation through the guiding principle that says there are no mistakes, that I am the way I was designed to be, that I came to, that this is not even who I am, but that it's who the story I came to play out. What if I were to see it as a teacher rather than as a problem? What would be different? You see, that's how I begin to shift my perception, is I bring in the constructs of reality and begin to look at what I've been deeming up until now as a problem. I begin to look through it at the same deal through the eyes and say, this is not a problem. This is an instruction. This is me teaching me what it is I'm believing that's keeping me from fully remembering the immensity of who I truly am as a spiritual being. And that's how we begin to make distance. We don't try to get rid of these beliefs, because good luck with that. We don't fight against them. We don't criticize or try to eliminate them, judge them. We don't make them a problem. We begin to instead simply look at them for what can I learn from them? What is the growing edge here? How can I refine this so that I become a purer example of what it is I was designed to be?
So would you say that when we feel anger, guilt, sadness, and other negative emotions, and we believe this is caused by someone or something outside of ourselves, we should first listen to our inner conversation, recognize if we are on prosecutor, rescuer, or victim roles with ourselves first before we try to find answers outside of ourselves?
Absolutely. It's like beginning to just ask the question, where am I on the triangle right now? Anytime I have any one of those feelings, anytime I have what I call a lower frequency feeling, I'm in victim consciousness. Now, this doesn't mean that there's not a real place for grief, for instance. Grieving, again, it's how I frame it. If I tell myself I shouldn't be grieving, that grieving is a painful thing, a bad thing, a stuck place, then that's all a story about what is just simply my body releasing that which needs to be released in order to heal, in order to find resolution, in order to accept reality. And so I stop making it a problem that I'm grieving. So it doesn't mean I don't have what I feel. It's just that I recognize that what makes me feel bad about the grieving is not the grieving. Actually, there's a relief that goes with true grieving. There's a sense of, oh, it feels so good to just let that, those old crystallized ideas melt and dissolve in the form of tears. This feels like a cleansing. It feels like a purification. So that's not bad. But when I turn it into, oh, I can't handle this, this is not good, that this, I shouldn't be feeling that, or I'm angry because they won't give me what I deserve, or I'm resentful because they don't give me what I need, or I'm afraid because I don't think I have what it takes to handle life. Those feelings simply are messengers. They point me to the belief that I'm holding on to that may be such a part of a pattern that I don't even recognize it as a separate belief. It's so in my DNA. It's so cellular that all I know is that I'm in the throes of it. And now what I get to do is say, okay, let's put it in thought. Let's put it in words. What am I believing? Where am I on the triangle when I have that feeling, when I believe the thought that goes with it? And where do I tend to move next? And what would be different if I stepped outside and away from that triangle and began to look at it, look at the situation through the guiding principles? What would be different?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is I give myself that space for allowance, allowing me to be where I am, including when I'm in my story, that's a valid place to be. I can be there and conscious of it, and it be the most transformative place imaginable. It is the place where I call it being in the trenches. It's where the real work is done. It's where the real work of transformation takes place, in the trenches of life. When we're in our story, not when we're on some mountaintop feeling close to God, and those are, that's the fringe benefit of having gone into the trenches. But the trenches I must go into in order to have those mountaintop experiences, if that makes sense.
Yes, it definitely does. So, dear inner healers, family, all of you who are listening, we really hope that with this conversation, you remember that it is your choice to feel happiness, to feel peace, to feel abundance, in spite of whatever is happening around each of you, because you have the power to do this. You have the power to change your perspective, to see things differently, to feel differently. And by doing this, you can also reduce any sickness that you already have in your body, or prevent even having diseases that maybe your family had because of their beliefs and the way in which they used to act or respond in front of a situation or somebody. So I want to thank you, Lynn, for everything that you've given us today. And I wonder if you have any final words for our listeners.
I would just say this, that it is what you believe that determines how you feel. And so just by questioning the unhappy belief that is creating the unhappy feelings that you're feeling, just by questioning what it is you're telling yourself in that moment and beginning to look at it in a different way, choosing to see it in a different way, will completely change the way you feel. And if you question what you believe, then what it gives you is the opportunity to experience in this very moment the freedom of choice, the freedom that comes with knowing that it's what I tell myself about reality, not what happens to me, that determines the inner amount of peace I get to experience.
Thank you very much, Lynn. And as we were talking off the radio, I really hope that maybe soon we can have you here in Peru for all the people in South America, for all the people that want to come, and we can work on a workshop maybe in Cusco for all the people who would like to learn in a personal way how to work out of the victim consciousness towards an objective mind and an objective way of life. So hopefully this dream comes true very soon. And thank you again for being with us today.
Let's
it has been
happen.
A real pleasure.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day,
talk
Louisiana.
To you soon. You too. Thank you.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.